Anytime you can reduce energy, you reduce the carbon footprint. The other thing is water conservation. Broilers, as they get older, approach 6 pounds, they drink incredible amounts of water. Where does that water come from? So they're talking about putting gutters around the house, as people do for their gardens, right? Collect the water and then run it through some sort of filter and then store it and then bring it back. And basically you're recycling the water that they're consuming.
We want to thank the innovative companies and products whose support and trust make this podcast possible.
AccuGut C.1 is a proven solution for your coccidiosis toolbox. Give those traditional tools a break and rotate to AccuGut C.1. Visit dsm-firmanich.com/AccuGut to learn more. AB Vista, intelligent nutritional solutions to boost poultry health and performance. Natural Biologics is looking deeper to find the natural solutions to your poultry health challenges. Nexus, powered by SAM, where science meets performance. Sid Lines, an Ecolab company, AV Prime program offers a broad range of cleaning and disinfection solutions combined with tailored advice to improve hygiene on your farm or hatchery.
Welcome to the Poultry Podcast Show. I am back again today with Dr. Joe Giambroni. Welcome back.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here again.
I'm excited to talk to you today again about some different future technologies that might be within poultry houses.
Yep.
I know we've talked in the past about how you got into the poultry industry, but if other people haven't heard, maybe they'd love to hear again. So what's your story? How did you start into the poultry?
Okay, well, it's kind of serendipity. I started at the University of Delaware to be a marine biologist because I wanted to be Jacques Cousteau. And I found out it was mainly, I love the ocean, I love the fish, but it's really was meant for graduate students. So at the time, I wasn't really interested in that. So I started into veterinary medicine and animal science. I liked the small classes. People were really nice. And then after I completed my bachelor's, I met this veterinarian who graduated University of Georgia. He worked with poultry diseases. He got me interested in virology and poultry diseases. I finished there. And then he said, well, I graduated from Georgia. Why don't you try to go there? And so he introduced me to a professor down there. So I went there and I really liked it. They had great facilities, spent 3 years there. It was wonderful. And I said, well, what am I going to do now? And then my major professor told me about Auburn. I didn't really know where it was. So I went there and they took me under their wings. I started the program in which they didn't have. So I had to build up a lab and all this other things and taught in the veterinary school. And so it worked really well. And then in order to get some of these facilities, I had to work with the poultry industry because the university didn't have the money. So I really liked working with these individuals. And when anytime we fell on hard times with grants, we went to the industry and they were able to support me. So I was really in the heart of the broiler industry and not many egg layers. So I got to know these individuals really well and they supported me. And so it took off. And after 42 years, a lot of my students, graduates and undergraduates have moved up in the poultry industry. And so even though I've retired, I still have an in with them and I can still do these kinds of things.
Yeah, that does sound like serendipity.
It was. Grew up in Philadelphia in the streets of Philly and it ended up in the chicken houses in Alabama. never thought I was going to do that.
No.
And my friends from Philadelphia said, well, do they have running water and toilets there? Because they didn't know. They thought it was all cotton fields and all this kind of stuff.
Oh, that's too funny. Yeah, imagine that. There, you know, are some basic technologies elsewhere outside of Philly.
Yeah, there are.
A worldwide leader in animal nutrition, Adiseo's portfolio of products includes methionine, the full range of vitamins, enzymes, organic selenium, probiotics, mycotoxin management strategies, and palatability products. With such a diverse offering, Adiseo supports its customers with a broad range of expertise, tools, and services to help them maintain a competitive advantage. Adiseo, fueling predictable profits. To learn more, visit Adiseo at www.adiseo.com.
So today I want to talk to you about some of the maybe new and existing and the future predictions for technology of what is and what could be in the broiler industry. So one of the things that has become just really popular in the broiler industry because of producer and also consumer demand is environmental enrichment. So can you talk to us a little bit about environmental enrichment for broiler houses?
First, you have to have some sort of definition of it, what it is. It's the process of improving the environment of an animal to meet behavioral needs and reduce stress. And that means different things to different people. In the past, as I told you about before, the industry worked on this acronym FLAWS, with feed, light, litter, air, water, sanitation, security, and space. And that's basically where it ended. But now, as you say, the consumer wants to know how the chickens are raised. And so there's a number of things here that I'll talk about. One of them is natural light for windows. You know, the chicken houses are totally enclosed, and consumers want to know if the chickens have access to that. So the Auburn University, my alma mater, has just gotten a $300,000 grant from NEPA to look at windows in natural light. So we'll see how that goes. The other thing is Purdue, I think, is one of these that are kind of ahead of the thing. They look at elevated perches, pecking opportunities, hiding spaces. And so we never really thought about that. And a lot of it has to do with bringing in bales of hay, straw, things like that, and putting them in certain areas to one way to would be to elevate perches. And that would allow perches. That would allow, and also talking about tables, platforms, ramps, so that the chickens can move around and in what the producer or the consumer would say have a better life. So we'll see. And pecking opportunities, hanging baskets of hay, straw, other interesting facilities and to stimulate pecking and interaction between others. And so hiding spaces, putting these bales and strays and boxes and buckets to allow the chickens then to conceal themselves if they need to. And also they have things like free range. What is free range and what's pasture range? So free range is defined about where chickens spent the majority of their time in the house with a small amount of time with doors open, and they can get out, you know, peck around, walk around, whatever, forage. And then at some point in time when it gets dark, the lights come on in the chicken house and they go back in and the doors go back. And now there's pasture-raised poultry, and this is kind of a niche business where the chickens spent most of the time out in pasture, and then they about 80% of the time, and then they go into a house, a mobile house, where feeding and watering and hiding, whatever. That mobile house is moved around pasture with a tractor so that the litter doesn't build up in any particular area, and then also the chickens then can forage in the fecal material. So those are things that the industry is looking at. I think the problem is there's not much science behind them. We don't know. There's no way of determining whether the chickens have some emotional experience or even gain anything about in it. The you know, we talk about sustainability. It has to do with profitability. If you're asking the farmers to do these things, well, what do they get out of it? And so we just have to convince them, and we'll just see how that turns out. Again, this is something that there's a lot of ideas, but there's no foundation for it.
Yeah, I think some of the measures can be difficult because they can't say, but maybe you could have some other outcomes like improved mortality or body weight or more uniformity or, you know, just some other ways to indicate. But also, yeah, the happiness thing can be difficult, but I know there's some a lot of different welfare groups that are trying to understand what that means.
Yeah, I mean, it's called this anthropomorphism. Basically, you're taking human traits and then putting them onto chickens. Well, they may not have the same emotions. Again, it gets down to performance. It's dollar for dollar. If I put in $100,000 or $20,000 in the house to do these things, what do I get out of it?
Yeah, it's a really interesting interplay. Because it's gotta make sense, or at least not make any conditions worse.
Yeah, so, no question.
So what do you think about the future poultry houses? I mean, if we're looking at adding more enrichment, other things change over time too, as we improve the way we build the buildings from the size ventilation, controllers, all of those things. So what do you think we're heading to in the future?
Well, some of the things have already started in solar energy and panels on the roof. Costco just built a really large farm in the Midwest and they're using solar energy. They're using water conservation, which I'll talk about in a minute, to produce chickens for the rotisserie in their stores. But what I read, some economists said they'd have to build 20 such farms in order to get enough rotisserie chicken. But anyway, in the meantime, anytime you can reduce energy, you reduce the carbon footprint. The other thing is water conservation. Broilers, as they get older, approach 6 pounds, they drink incredible amounts of water. Where does that water come from? So they're talking about putting gutters around the house, as people do for their gardens, right? Collect the water and then run it through some sort of filter and then store it and then bring it back. And basically you're recycling the water that they're consuming. And there's so many other things. I've got a list here. In-house stir fans, things like lighting clocks that have an effect, you know, they can control different things, automatic tunnel doors operating, heating, including zone heating, temperature changes that can affect moisture controllers. All this has, you know, making the house a wireless. And so you have wireless communication so that if you're out working, you can control these things. Outside temperature recording, water consumption, which it's hard to measure right that. Feed clock functioning, monitoring, winch operations, all these things that, you know, a lot of these things are already controlled by computers, but they're things like humidity, sensorization, things like that, airspeed, that they're not fine tuned. And that would reduce labor, but also it would increase the amount of energy and the performance by using this material and these new ideas.
Yeah. So do you think that some of the current dimensions of the house just depend on the, you know, the size of the space, the layout, where the land and whatever is going, but do you foresee any major changes in things like dimensions? I mean, we also have limits in terms of our building materials and how wide or long a building can be, but have you seen any maybe developments in just what the buildings themselves look like?
The size is a major thing. When I first came to Auburn, it was 20 feet by 30 feet in length. Mm-hmm. And now they've had some that are 50 feet width and 600 feet. I think I talked to you about that.
Yeah.
And had up to 55,000. I think the house, they're still going to be rectangular with the evaporative cooling the way it is, and orientate them as far as wind, sun, and things like that. But I don't see the structure of the house from the outside looking different. Maybe some things in the inside, but not to say that it won't happen. I mean, some engineer from Georgia Tech or someplace else will come up. You know, I first came here, everybody was talking about having houses underground or have circular houses and things like that. And they were fads, but they didn't stay. And it got too difficult to deal with that. So yeah. I can't say never, you know, we might have underground poultry houses sometime. Yeah. You know, I've been to Canada and I've seen 3-story houses.
Oh, right.
And that's all about keeping the BTUs in, as opposed in the South, it's getting the BTUs out. And so when you're up in Canada North and it's minus 20, you want to capture the heat from the first floor up to the second floor. So yeah. We haven't reached that.
Yeah, that's a different thought process for sure.
I'll say it works for them.
Yeah. So what do you see for the future of poultry production? I know there's a lot of like major themes as far as growth rate, strains, et cetera, that are kind of bubbling up over time in popular media, but where are we going with poultry production?
There's two things I think which are important. One is in ovo nutrition, and the other is in ovo sexing machines. So they're basically, and the other talk we'll talk about is in-house hatching. All these things are novel. I mean, they're really interesting. Some of it started in Europe. We'll see where it catches on here. But as we talked about before, when the eggs are taken out of the setter, they get injected with an in ovo machine, which is mainly giving them vaccines. And mainly these are recombinant vaccines. In areas where they don't do those in a hatchery or they do them after the chickens hatch, you could inject in ovo like probiotics to prevent infections, amino acids for muscle development, vitamin C, E, and other things for immunity. Insect meals, that's something that a lot of people are talking about. The problem is you'd have to have insect farms because of the amount that they're consuming. So the turkey industry, I think, is interested because a lot of them aren't doing in ovo. So the problem is giving the vaccine and then giving them this in material. There could be a problem, interference between the replication of the vaccine and then injecting these. And that studies need to be done. So the other one, second one would be in ovo sexing machines. This is started in Europe mainly for layers because you have to dispose of the males afterwards. And for a lot of people, that's not something they want to think about. So the in ovo sexing machines, basically they're machines that then when they're, the in ovo machine goes down on the egg, not only does it get rid of the clear eggs, the dead ones, it has the ability then to determine the sex of the bird based on the color, the size and structure of the wings or hormonal changes. So those now are being used in the layers in the U.S. What would be the advantage in broilers? Well, there's a big difference between the body weight of males and females and how fast they grow. It takes a female about a week more to reach the weight of 2.5. Pounds. Well, if you're grabbing them all once, then you put them in the processing plant, you're going to have uneven amounts coming out. So the idea is then if you can sex the males, put them in their different houses and then the females, process the males a week earlier at a certain age and then grow the females up to that age. And that's important for companies like Kentucky Fried Chicken. They want everyone that walks in that store to get the same amount of breast meat, plus or minus. So if someone got a male, if someone female, they'd be different. And now in the processing plant, they have these little scales, their cups, where the breast will go through or the legs, whatever. And once they reach a certain weight, if it's over, it becomes like from an 8-pound bird, it'll turn over. So that's something that I think we'll be doing. And some of that has been done with feather sexing. The other thing is in-house hatching. We know that small eggs, even though you have the same breeder flock, the smaller eggs, they're not all going to be the same size. They're not all going to be 50 grams or whatever. The smaller eggs are going to hatch faster, okay, than the larger eggs. So you're going to have chicks hatching out. And the idea is right now they pull the chicks to go in off to be processed, go to the farms, when about 75% have hatched. So what do you do with those other 25%? Well, they don't normally do a second collection. So the idea then would be to put the eggs in the setter, and then you pull them out, then you do the in ovo work, and then you put them, instead of putting them back in the egg boxes that go in that hatcher, in the same hatcher, you put them into a different set of whatever. And then you put them into a house. I mean, you put them into a truck that has that same heat. And then you take them to a farm. And then there's another machine that then would take the eggs and lay them out on top of the butcher block paper. And then so they would hatch out on that paper. The problem I see with that is that would work for a large company-owned farm because they could handle that and then they could remove what the leftovers. If you do that on a small farm, it could be more cost more. And the other thing is, what do you do with the eggs, the material that doesn't hatch out? Will the chickens then consume them? I think it's a great idea. And but there are other things. You could have contamination in the house and things of that nature. I think that in the future we could. It has to be worked out, and we'll see how it goes. But I can see the idea of doing it. I mean, because you've got too many eggs that don't hatch out in time, and then they're left in the hatchery, and then you lose them, and then they end up in further processed and end up back in the poultry feed or animal feed or whatever. So I think it's a great idea. We'll see how it goes. I guess that would be the end of that question if you have others. Sure. Catching machines, if you want to go on, I mean, you can go on catching machines. Automatic catching machines in houses, I think, are going to be great because basically what you have is a catching crew that has to go from one farm to the next farm. They usually do that at night. A machine, I think, could do it with less trauma to the chickens. The other thing, gas stunning. And there are individuals say that what we're doing right now with stunning them and putting them in the water and electric, you know, then stunning them that way is maybe some cruelty to that. We'll see. And then you and I, we've talked about filtration of air. I think, you know, it's been shown that with avian influenza that it will replicate in the feather follicles and dander, and which could be sucked into the house. And then you go on the exhaust, you have ammonia, carbon monoxide going out the exit. So there are some new filters that have come out that they appear to be less expensive. They're more efficient and require less. You won't have to increase the fan speed too much, but you definitely will. Another thing I saw was laser technology and scaring signals to be used outside the house to keep the birds away. And I think scaring signals, I like that. That could go on during the day. And then maybe lasers at night to keep wild birds, especially, you know, ducks and geese away. In-house vocalization and monitoring, I like that idea because when you walk into a house, you can tell the difference between them, the ones that are healthy and ones that are not. Another virtual reality and AI, that's a great tool because now students and people that want to learn about farming, with biosecurity, you can't get these people into a house. But with the virtual, they can look into a house and see what's going on. They can have tutors and things like that. Studies of microbiome and how it impacts poultry health, I think that's really something we need to do. It's being done some. Genetic selection using AI for breeders, CRISPR, and things like that to improve resistance to infection. And then there's a thing called metagenomics, which can differentiate closely related microorganisms. I've read about plasmid vaccines to stimulate immune stimulation. So that would be the end of that one.
Yeah, there's definitely a lot of really interesting things. I hope they keep staying in development because some of them turn out and some of them don't, right? You always got to have a big pool to start with.
Yeah, you throw mud against the wall and you see what sticks.
Yeah, yeah. So one of the things that is really popular everywhere, including among university students to change your workload, is the use of artificial intelligence. Where do you think that's going to go within the poultry industry?
No question that the industry is moving that way, if nothing else, to reduce the amount of labor, which is a problem. But I see whole house Wi-Fi sensors, robotics. They even have robots now that can pick up mortality. Incredible. Cameras to access enhanced ventilation, ensuring comfortable environment, extend data collection on all aspects of microenvironment, behavior, health, movement. All functions are controlled with computer, smartphone, using whole Wi-Fi. So that's one area. And there are a number of areas. Automatic feeding and nutritional optimization. If you use AI-powered systems, you can adjust the diets on real-time growth on the fly in environmental conditions. These systems will ensure optimal nutrition, reduce waste, improve feed conversion, leading to healthier birds and cost savings. AI and breeding and genetics, AI algorithms can analyze genetic data to identify birds with desirable traits such as disease resistance, growth rate, efficient feed utilization. This will speed up selection breeding processes and enhance productivity while maintaining genetic diversity. So there are actually a couple more I've got here. One is supply chain optimization and marketing forecasting. And that's a big thing. Everything has been supply chain. You know, we saw disruptions during COVID. So there will be AI models to optimize logistics by predicting demand and supply fluctuations, ensuring better inventory management, reducing food waste. AI-driven analysis can assist poultry farmers in setting competitive prices and identifying profitable markets. Another one is blockchain. Blockchain is something that it's another buzzword, and it's basically finding out where your food came from. And so you combine AI with blockchain technology, which will enhance food safety and traceability. And that, you know, that is so, you know, we saw that with Chipotle when they had a, no, I don't throw these words out, but they had problems initially because they're getting vegetables from that had contamination with E. coli. And certainly they've taken care of all that. And they're a very profitable company right now. So consumers and regulatory bodies can track poultry products from farm to table, ensuring transparency and reducing the risk of contamination or fraud. The last one I have here is AI-driven control. So advances in AI-driven control systems, which we talked about before, can adjust ventilation, heating, cooling based on real-time data, not on something that was set last week or last month. And they can continually change with even in the day, because you have tremendous swings in the morning to the evening, and you know, you don't often be able to change. And, you know, you differentiate between, you know, we are in the spring now, and some nights can be 20 and some nights can be 60. So that's really difficult. That'll improve energy efficiency and reduce environmental impact. So those are some of the things that I had in mind to discuss. Other things that you want to talk about, I can come up with some answers. I mean, I'll be right. But I'm full of answers. And you know, there's no dumb answer. The only dumb answer is questions. The only dumb question is one that's not responded to.
It's time for our famous three.
We want to thank the innovative companies and products whose support and trust make this podcast possible.
Boehringer Ingelheim, health experts bring industry-leading knowledge and expertise to today's poultry producers to help them solve challenging health issues through smart, science-driven decision-making using the best resources available. Probiotech International, creating the next generation of feed and water additives to improve animal nutrition, health, and well-being. Innovation is in our nature. Visit probiotech.com/EN for more information. Evonik, we are sciencing the global food challenge. Adiseo provides nutritional solutions and services to help producers achieve their targets in a high-quality, safe, and sustainable way. Making life easier for animals and those who care for them is the mission of Jeffo. Natural Biologics is using cutting-edge science to dig deeper into the poultry health challenges you face. By gathering scientific evidence, they identify the most effective combinations of natural ingredients that improve animal health. Visit naturalbiologics.com/poultry to see the newest research in both turkeys and chickens.
Well, I think we've certainly covered a lot of great topics today. And the last time we chatted, we talked about some of your favorite resources. So today, I want to wrap up with, what is your best advice to be successful in the poultry industry?
Well, during my 42 years of students, mainly undergraduates, I had to kind of re-educate them on what they needed, because all I thought they needed to do was just memorize things. And that's not it. The most important thing to be successful is good communication skills. And that's verbal, that's written, and even things like using the cell phone, texts, emails. I get so many of these during the day with poor grammar, misspellings. Individuals are not editing them, or they're writing them when they're mad. So once you put something out there, it's there in perpetuity. I mean, it's out there and you can't take it away. So other things is your personality. You have to have pleasant personality. You need to be positive, well-dressed, well-groomed, and leadership. People say, what is a leader? The first thing, the most important thing with a leader is a good listener. You've got to be able to listen. You need to be a team worker. You need to be a problem solver. You need to be a critical thinker. All those things is, you know, if there are problems, you got to come up with an answer relatively quickly. You can't go to a book and learn out where these things are. And really important is you must have a moral compass. And people say, what is a moral compass? You need to have a person with values, a person that's trustworthy, somebody that will accept adversity. You know, they may have a different race, color, religion, but you have to treat them all the same and know what you're saying. Don't look down on people. And the last thing is, and I talked about this before in the first podcast, was lifelong learning. I tell my students when they're ready to graduate, this is not the end of learning. It is the beginning of the end. That's like Winston Churchill said, you know, it's the beginning of the end. So you basically have to keep learning. And as I told, and we said before, the internet is the basic. You go to Poultry Digest, Poultry Time, there's a poultry everything. And they say, well, I don't have the time. Well, you do, because all you have to do is click that link, and they may have like four or five discussion areas. It takes you 10 seconds to go through there and find the ones you want. You click on that, and it doesn't take you more than a few minutes to read that and learn something for it. So you do have time. It's not like, I can't do it, you know, because I got too many other things. Well, you know, at night when you're watching some soap opera or something, you have time to take half an hour to go through these things, and you learn so much. I mean, no one can learn everything. As we talked about before, books are already outdated. And go to meetings, as I said before, and interact with people, network. In order to get grants now, the NEFA grants, there are multi-institutional, multifactorial, multidisciplinary, multi-everything. If they got $5 million, you'll be lucky to get $100,000 out of that. But you wouldn't have gotten anything unless you brought these other people in.
All sage advice for so many different areas across so many different potential jobs that someone could have. So thank you for spending some more time chatting with me today. It was, as always, educational.
I enjoy it. These are fun and keeps me grounded.
Glad to hear it. Well, listeners, if you liked what you heard today, share it with some of your friends so they can learn more about the industry. Thank you for listening.
Do you feel overwhelmed with mundane tasks that eat up your valuable time? It's time to reclaim your schedule and focus on what truly matters. Get your time back with Elite Remote Talent without the time zone hassle. Delegate $10 an hour tasks to focus on more $1,000 an hour tasks. Schedule your free strategy call at wisevas.io.